This is a Discovery Channel Radio podcast. Learn more about our podcast, including Discovery Channel News Podcast, at discoverychannelradio.com. You can also get Discovery Channel Radio 24 hours a day on Sirius Satellite Radio. Learn more at Sirius.com.
In 1926, the commissioning of Route 66 marked the beginning of a new era in America, one that made traversing the country a fun and exciting pastime. But there is a sinister side of this beloved road. Join us as we head west from Chicago to explore the dark side of this famed highway. It's been replaced by major interstates, is no longer included on modern-day maps, and was officially decommissioned around 20 years ago. So what is it about Route 66 that drives Americans wild?
In America, freedom is about getting in your car and hitting the road. Like this road here that we're next to, old Route 66. Get on that road, head east, and at the other end of this road on Route 66 is Chicago and the Great Lakes. Get on this road, head west, drive into the sunset, and you're on your way to the Santa Monica Pier on the Pacific coastline. It's about freedom and finding adventure and finding a new life and finding yourself.
But in the search to find yourself, you just might find ghosts on your travels.
Well, you can get your kicks on Route 66, but there's also the dark side.
Route 66 is a great corridor to find hauntings. I just think it's the prime stomping grounds for any worthwhile phantom or spirit.
Tales of highway spirits began when the highway was first commissioned in 1926.
Just as any construction project is dangerous, Route 66 was very dangerous for people who were working on it at that time.
Some say the spirits of those who died building the Mother Road still linger. But without their sacrifices, it seems America wouldn't be the same place it is today.
Route 66 played a large part in developing the West. For many, many years, it was the main route to go out west.
And as the automobile became more and more important in people's lives and people took up the family vacation, Route 66 really became a pivotal part of the American culture.
Route 66 was the way west. It's when people traveled across the country looking for new adventures, new job opportunities, and a new life. They hit the road. Around every corner, there was something that you'd never seen before, something entirely different than what was in your hometown. And so there was a sense of adventure and discovery when you were out on the route.
Route 66 had created its own culture, with motels, filling stations, and diners popping up from Chicago to Los Angeles. But just as quickly as this car culture was created, it came crashing down.
When people started traveling the interstates, Route 66 kind of changed overnight. I've heard people talk about the day that the interstate opened, that you could lay down in Route 66 and there would be no cars coming.
A lot of little towns sort of dried up and blew away. So a lot of little towns are sort of sad remnants of what they were when Route 66 was in its heyday.
But today, Route 66 has seen a rebirth in popularity. And people are starting to take an interest in the often weird and offbeat relics along the roadside.
These old motels are really terrific. They have so much character.
What's special about it is its history. You know, it takes us back to an older time, a simpler time.
I like the fact that it's got some character to it, and it's ungentrified, and it's old, and it hasn't been turned into some modern strip mall. That's what I like best about Route 66, is the older character of it.
And for some, memories of Route 66 will forever be a part of them.
Well, I thought a lot of people have different ways of expressing themselves as far as doing the tribal tattoos and that type of thing. And I thought that since I love Route 66, why not do it?
The Carthage drive-in theater, the Cozy Dog in Springfield, the one I got from Metro Diner about 2 months ago, and then the Big Texan in Amarillo, Texas.
To me, it's more appealing and more interesting. You know, I don't know, that's just me.
But with all the nostalgic and fun-filled memories, it's hard to deny the road's mysterious and haunted past.
There have been some murders on the route, some very mysterious murders.
You know, I would not like to break down on Route 66 at all. That's when your mind could really get going. Sitting in a nice old car along the side of Route 66, thinking about the ghosts of people who'd been there before. Yeah. You could really conjure up some good ones that way.
And you don't even have to go far. At mile marker 1, the start of the route in Chicago, Illinois, Route 66 ghost stories have only just begun.
From the Fort Dearborn Massacre to the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, bloodshed, trauma, mayhem, slaughter. We've got it all here in Chicago.
But it was Chicago's most notorious disaster that has brought about most of Chicago's ghosts.
Legend has it that as the fire raged all around this area, that people were obviously fleeing for their lives.
It was the Great Chicago Fire, and in 1871, it destroyed over 17,000 buildings and killed hundreds. Many died trying to escape their burning homes, others while they slept. The Chicago Water Tower was one of the few buildings that survived.
I would say that this is probably a good representation of Chicago's past in a ghostly fashion, something that survived death and, in fact, lives on long after other people passed on.
It seems victims of the fire still live on and haunt visitors who come to the start of the Mother Road and bid them bon voyage as they begin their journey west.
There have been reports of people who still see the ghostly image of a worker dangling from a rope through the windows of the water tower. Apparently his ghost lives on in the tower as the tower has survived also.
Along with the hundreds of victims of the Great Chicago Fire, Chicago has one spirit that stands out above the rest. Her name is Resurrection Mary.
I must say that I'm a bit partial towards the hitchhiking ghost story, Resurrection Mary, on the south side of Chicago.
The origins of Resurrection Mary are unknown, but if you're driving on Chicago's south side, you just might see her hitching for a ride.
The latest experience was that the gentleman was driving in a car and he saw lady walking.
The man picked up the hitchhiker and dropped her off a few miles down the road, where she disappeared before his very eyes.
It was a pretty strange sensation. Being a policeman for so many years, there's not too many things that bother you, but that was one that kind of sent a chill down my spine.
Heading west from Chicago, Tulsa, Oklahoma is a natural spot to stop when looking for some Route 66 nostalgia. The route makes its way right through the heart of this city with a small-town feel. Here, country western music reigns supreme, and it seems the spirits of those who played it best live on forever at the Cane's Ballroom.
I heard one time about somebody seeing a black figure in there. They said it was just standing in the corner, and when they actually took a good look, it wasn't there.
Since its opening in the 1920s, the Cane's has been through its ups and downs, but through it all, it has been a Route 66 landmark.
Route 66 was really the only way in and out of town if you were coming from the east or the west. So when you came into downtown, one of the places that you would absolutely go to would be Cane's Ballroom.
That's where I think the road traveled for many musicians that have performed there throughout the decades.
The Cane's started off as a garage for the founder of Tulsa, Tate Brady, but was converted to a dance hall by the late 1920s.
And people would come and they would do the penny dance or the 5-cent dance there. They could take dance lessons during the day, and at night they'd throw these wonderful dances where their students got to practice. Now, in about the 30s, Bob Wills came into play.
Wills was a well-known country singer from Texas. After moving to Tulsa, he was set up with his own radio program.
They produced a radio program that went on at noon every day live from the Cane's Ballroom. And so anybody in this area would tune in every noon, and people would come from all over the country just to see Bob Wills.
Wills and his bandmates, the Texas Playboys, became a popular act to see, and the Cane's quickly became known as the house that Bobby built.
Bob Wills is credited with being the creator of the only truly American musical genre, and that being Western swing, and that's influenced everybody in country music today.
Before long, anyone who was anyone in music wanted to play the Cane's Ballroom.
All throughout the 50s, anyone who played the Cane's Ballroom got their picture up on the wall. And if you're an aficionado of Western swing music, there's a lot of people up there to definitely see.
But it seems good times weren't meant to last. The draw of Route 66 and the potential for more fame and fortune out west got to Bob. So in 1943, Bob Wills headed to California on Route 66. And the Cane's wouldn't be the same for more than 30 years.
After his departure, the ballroom went through a series of incarnations. It was sort of a rough and tumble place.
The Cane's Ballroom was known as the crazy place. It had a nickname of the Rowdy Roadhouse, and promoters avoided it. This Tulsa City prosecutor named it the biggest menace in the city of Tulsa.
The Cane struggled to stay open for the next decade before it was taken over by Larry Schaefer in 1975, a man who had always loved this landmark venue.
Larry's a real colorful character. Larry brought everything from pig wrestling, mud wrestling, the Sex Pistols, Van Halen.
Some of the biggest names in the music industry played at the Cane's Ballroom, in excess, The Police, Pat Benatar, Talking Heads, Greg Kin Band.
It was during this time that employees noticed some disturbing occurrences at the Cane's.
Larry Schaefer, when he owned it through the 80s, tried to sell it several times. One of the times, 1982, he brought his staff into his office and announced again that he was going to try to sell the ballroom. And as he said that, a ceiling tile fell out, and out fell fan letters from Bob Wills. And I believe Mr. Schaefer believes that was Bob Wills' way of saying, you're not selling the ballroom.
And so this previous owner felt that this was Bob's way of saying, I like you, please don't sell the place, until he did find an owner that apparently Bob approved of. I have to tell you, there's just something I can't explain there. There's definitely an energy there. I felt it when I took the job. And as I began to talk to the employees, I had that experience validated.
Footsteps walking across the wood floor, people seeing people out of the corners of their eyes.
I've heard a myriad of stories from my staff and from former owners speculating that Bob Wills are still with us.
Perhaps the renewed prosperity of the Cane's Ballroom awakened Bob Wills' spirit.
Bob Wills is haunting the Cane's Ballroom.
He likes to come back every now and then, check, see how things are going, take an inventory.
If Bob Wills comes out with me tonight and taps me on the shoulder, I'd ask him if he wants to two-step.
But not everyone is as excited to meet Wills' ghost.
We're sort of a rough-and-tumble venue. Thusly, we have rough-and-tumble people who work for us. So when you have a bartender that's used to serving these riotous, clamoring crowds, 8, 10, 12 feet deep, come up to you trembling and telling you that they've seen something weird, you know that it's got to have some validity.
Like so many before him, Route 66 was the key to Bob Wills' dream of fame and fortune out west. But many believe he's traversed this sacred road again in the afterlife. Visitors stopping at Cane's during their tour of historic Route 66 just might come face to face with a 66 legend.
I have to confess to you now that I will go to great lengths to not be the last person there to close up.
And who knows? The ghost of Bob Wills might hitch a ride as you head west, just for old time's sake. Route 66 history buffs comb the Mother Road in search of nostalgia. And if a ghost town is on your list of things to see, look no further than Holbrook, Arizona.
It's just it's a quiet little town. It's a great little town. If somebody a mile away sneezes, they'll say, bless you, a mile away.
But in Holbrook, only some of the population is living. Locals believe the historic Navajo County Courthouse is haunted.
You get a cold shiver once in a while in a room that isn't cold. The hair will stand up on the back of your neck sometimes, and you get a smell.
In the winter at night, it gets dark here about 5, and I waste no time getting out that back door and in my car. It's a creepy feeling then.
But even in its heyday, the town of Holbrook was tortured by ghosts. But passerbys making their way to or from California didn't stay long enough to find out. Holbrook was once situated on one of only two turns in Route 66, making the town a popular rest stop during 66's heyday. But while its 90-degree turn is its claim to fame, it's also been blamed for its ghostly reputation.
66 was known as the Bloody Route.
The roads were not very good, and they were very narrow, and people had this new feeling of speed under their feet, and they tried to go as fast as they could, and it resulted in a lot of accidents.
It was very easy to have 3 people a day die within 50 miles of Holbrook on the route.
But when the route was redirected and interstates bypassed Holbrook, the town experienced a death of its own.
When 66 bypassed Holbrook, Holbrook panicked. They did the typical small town thing. Oh no, we're bypassed, we're dying. And they went into a, I call it a death mode. And it's taken since then to start bringing it back and saying, no, you didn't, you're not going to die.
While much of the 66 attractions in Holbrook have been destroyed or abandoned, it's the Navajo County Courthouse that sits directly on the corner of Old Route 66 that is bringing back the tourists. Today, the courthouse and its attached jail are a museum, and visitors and staff can't imagine what life was like behind these bars.
You'd have to be pretty tough mentally to serve your time in this place, I think.
They've told me when that cell door locks, you think the end of the world hits you the first time.
This is a lot like an animal cage. It is. You're in here, you shut the doors, you've got bars all around.
But there's something about this jail that makes it even creepier than most.
The feeling in the jail is damp and cold. We have heat there, but it's a damp, cold place, and you can be there in the middle of winter and get your bone chilled.
The feeling is just real eerie when you walk into there.
Even tourists have been affected by the disturbing presence.
It's very creepy, very... Not inhumane, like subhumane. I mean, it's just... I can't even imagine an animal being in here.
Not a hard sell saying that this place is haunted. Just walking in, seeing the shadows of all the bars and the old bunks and whatnot in there, it's not hard to believe at all. Not hard to believe at all.
The story of the Navajo County Courthouse's resident specter dates back to 1855.
George Smiley was a local person that was convicted of murder, and they had a trial for him in this building.
He was a railroad worker, and there was an argument over his paycheck. The man he was arguing with turned around to walk away. George Smiley shot him in the back.
Smiley was the first person sentenced to hang in Holbrook at the Navajo County Courthouse. He sat in the attached jail for months before his punishment was to be carried out. Many believe his spirit still lingers, unable to escape his eternal cell. And one former courthouse employee tried contacting Smiley's spirit and got a terrifying result.
In 1966, the past director, June Ford, and her two kids and her friend came into the courthouse. It was Halloween, and they went up in there and they got their Ouija board out.
June and her group first asked the board if a spirit was present.
Well, right away, the handheld thing on the Ouija board just zoomed over to yes. Okay, let's ask the Ouija board if the ghost has a name. And immediately the board spelled out George. And that just shocked us all.
Suddenly, the building filled with horrific noises.
There was a howling coming from that duct back there, and it was just vibrating through this room.
The group fled the building. It took some time before June was over the event.
After I became more comfortable with the building and coming in at night, sometimes alone, I just talked to him. I'd say, George, come on, you guys, just, quiet down. I got work to do. And sometimes the noises would get softer. I just really believe that there are souls in this old building.
Many believe there is a spirit of a woman who keeps George company in the afterlife.
There was a separate cell for the female prisoners in the jail. It's at the very back.
One of the jail's female prisoners was a woman named Mary. Unable to accept a life behind bars, she hung herself in her cell.
Probably took a bed sheet and hung herself that way by tying it over the pipes.
Perhaps Mary's untimely death has forced her spirit to remain locked inside the building.
We know she's around. I've seen her. My wife's seen her. My son's seen her.
One evening, Art and his family stopped to check on the building on their way into town.
There was a light on the courtroom, so I pulled in the back, and I came in, unlocked the door, went up the courtroom, turned the light off, and came downstairs. And as I came out, both my wife and my son were saying, "You've got to go back in there. There's somebody in there. You've left somebody in there." So I came back in, and I checked every room, every place I could. Went back down and I said, "There's no one in there." And they both said there was a lady standing at the window with some sort of whitish blue light behind her. And here is where the face in the window was seen, was right here. And this is where it appeared and went away that fast.
Was it Mary keeping watch over her eternal home? Those who work at the old Navajo County Courthouse have decided that the best way to deal with its resident ghosts is to do nothing at all. Today, tourists along the route come to Holbrook and visit its courthouse for some authentic Route 66 history. And as you walk through the old jail cell, staff give you one word of advice. Don't bother the ghosts.
Since the Ouija board incident, I don't know if anybody that's brought a Ouija board back in. I don't know of anybody that's tried to summon the dead. Why bother them?
It's the end of the road, Santa Monica, California. But unlike most of the more morbid finales along haunted Route 66, this end of the road is a breathtaking sight.
I think as 9 years old, that was probably the most awesome thing I had ever seen, was to get to the end of the road and know that it didn't go any farther, and nothing but water out there. It was gorgeous.
But don't be fooled. Underneath all this beauty is a dark side of Santa Monica, a dark side that will present itself to weary travelers. After traveling more than 2,200 miles, Route 66ers need a place to rest their weary heads. But in a hotel as haunted as the Georgian, sleep may be hard to come by.
Many of the people who works at the Georgian, and they've been here many years, they do believe that the ghosts are here. Many guests who come in here, they have said to me that this have a certain aura when you walk in here.
Perhaps it's the Georgian's unique Hollywood history and otherworldly surroundings which make it so haunting.
The Georgian Hotel is a very special place, built in 1933 in the Art Deco style. And it's, besides being a very, very special building in the city, it's a landmark.
We are right next to the beach, and we are located to be close to every place you want to go, recreation parks, movies, shopping, markets, you know.
But for celebrities of old Hollywood, the Georgian was considered a place of refuge.
From Clark Gable to Carol Lombard, Charlie Chaplin, many of them stayed here at the Georgian Hotel. So it's got a great history.
Today, the hotel commits to treating every guest like a 30s-era star.
When you come to Santa Monica, you step into the Georgian, you step back in time.
Guests can even enjoy a speakeasy similar to the one run by mobsters and which catered to Hollywood high rollers.
On the entrance to the Ocean Avenue, to the restaurant, there was a kind of a secluded area where people could gamble.
Despite being illegal, the speakeasy quickly became a popular spot among Hollywood elite and gangsters. But today, the Georgian speakeasy isn't illegal. It's a restaurant.
People can just come in, have a nice martini or a margarita or a glass of wine and just sit on the veranda, chit-chat.
But while modern-day guests relax, staff believe former speakeasy patrons still gamble the night away, long after their deaths.
One morning, I arrived, and I was about to turn on the lights in the restaurant, but I heard some voices, and I was concerned. I walked in further in into the restaurant, and I still heard people and clinging of the silverware, and I could see figures. But all of a sudden, everything just quiet, you know, and nobody was there. That was it.
On another occasion, the cook was startled by the disturbing sound of glasses crashing in the dining room.
He heard like somebody throw dishes, you know, or dishes went down on the floor. He rushed into the restaurant. But everything was fine. Everything was in place.
But the ghosts of the Georgian aren't restricted to its restaurant. Terrified hotel staff have reported eerie encounters from the rooms above.
My front desk agent mentioned that room 512 called down. She sent up the security to see what's going on, who's in the room, because she knew that the room wasn't rented. So the security agent went in, and 512 was empty. There's nobody in there.
Except, perhaps, for a ghost. It seems the millions of tourists each year who hop into their cars to experience a piece of Americana on Route 66 are willing to risk a sleepless night at the Georgian to complete the trip they started thousands of miles earlier. After all, they've been to haunted ballrooms and courthouses, old diners and filling stations, ghost towns and stretches of road that hide history's dark secrets. For those who say Route 66 is just a piece of pavement, they're missing out on the road trip of a lifetime.
Next time you're traveling at night on Route 66, remember, a nostalgic drive can quickly turn to terror. So before you head out, check your gas and oil. The last thing you want to do is break down on haunted Route 66. You never know who or what might come to your rescue.
You've been listening to a Travel Channel feature presentation. Thank you.